AWS to enter the space and report to the TechNet. The ExoMars mission is a mission that was canceled a few years back, and what it was a European Space Agency mission. Mars, they were going to send a solar-powered rover, and they were going to use the proton rocket from Russia to do that, and also the landing vehicle, the descent module, the thrusters and everything on it, also was built in Russia. But that fell apart a couple years ago because of the Ukraine invasion. The European Space Agency, that's it, we pull the plug, and we'll put this thing on ice for a while. And now it's been quite a few years. But now they just signed a $500 million deal with a couple of different companies, including Thales, it comes out of Italy. They're the ones that have built the couple of modules here. For NASA, they built the Omni module, the Tranquility module, and the International Space Station, and they built the Cygnus cargo vehicle. So they got them involved with helping them out with this rover. Let me drop it. The ExoMars rover, they call it the ExoMars Rosalind Franklin, named after a woman scientist from years ago. We'll see. The company is going to improve on it. They're also getting NASA involved to some degree. NASA's going to give them some plutonium, not for a radioisotope thermoelectric generator, because, like I said, it's solar powered. But they do need to keep the electronics and some of the parts on the vehicle. And they do use plutonium that just the heat coming off of that. They put it into a box. Was initially the type of box initially designed by NASA when they launched the Sojourner rover. It was small, like about the size of a big microwave back in the mid-90s. And the central part of those vehicles is called the web. Not the World Wide Web, but the web is a warm electronic box. And they put plutonium inside and keeps all the circuits hot. They also have tubes, heat radiating tubes that go out to different parts of the vehicle. So that's what's involved with that as well. It'll be good to see them eventually get this thing off. It's going to take a couple of years. Mars and Earth really come around and meet one another every roughly 26 months, or probably every little over years, and that's when the path is the shortest, and that's why you have launches to Mars, every couple of years. They're going to make next window, but they will make 2020. So we'll another rover running around on Mars. Right now we have two active ones, Curiosity and Perseverance, both by the year, by NASA. Two earlier ones that no longer are functioning. Spirit and Opportunity. Spirit lasted 6 years, Opportunity 14 years. And these are rovers that what Curiosity was. It's been going since 2012, so you're over to 12 years or so. So I just want to mention that. Any comments before I move on? WS.
72 Zulu Charlie. Yes. Uniform. I'm Charlie. How are you, Paul?
Okay, to Charlie. No, remember to Zulu. I'm not sure what to Charlie. I think you said November to Zulu. See, that's all. Yeah, go ahead.
Did you say that the Russians had a proton rocket that they were going to use?
Okay, guys, just stumbled for a little bit there. Charlie, the other station, I'm glad you're listening. Yeah, well, they call it the proton rocket. That's the name. They've had that for decades. It's nothing to do with protons or anything like that. That was the name of their rocket. You know, it ran on hypergolic fuels. You know, you put two fuels together and they ignite and off they go. So that was a heavy elliptical for many years. They used to launch interplanetary missions to Venus and also Mars on that vehicle. Back to you.
Oh, thank you for clearing that up. And I believe you also said, I just want to clarify, we now have two vehicles up on Mars. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And, they're proton rockets, but they're not launching them anymore. Right now, they're dealing with the Soyuz rockets. But they are developing another one. I was going to talk a little bit later. Yes, we have Perseverance, which won a couple of years ago, 2021, February. It landed, doing great. And then we have Curiosity, and that one, 2012, still operating, also doing great. And these things are roughly 10 feet by 10 feet if you had to measure them, you know. So good size vehicles. They're all, you know, six wheels, and very capable. They have arms, big 7-foot arms that stick out. Able to do a lot of work. They have labs on board and all of that. And the latest one, Perseverance, is a laser that they can shoot out of it and hit a rock if they want, and shoot the rock, and then they have a camera on board that takes a picture of that, splits them later, and they can evaluate it. They can tell what material it is. All kinds of good stuff. Anyway, back to you.
Thank you.
Real good. And of course they had Spirit and Opportunity. They were two solar powered ones, and like I said, Spirit went 6 years, Opportunity 14 years. They were just great. And they just kept going and going. They were hoping to get 3 months out of them when they launched those two. And they never quit. They were so well designed. And those two had webs or warm electronic boxes inside. And they had plutonium 239, I believe it was. 239. And that just, gives off some heat. This way they're able to survive the nights on Mars. And keep the electronics up and running. Opportunity would have kept on going more, but it just, during one of the winters, it was stuck in the sand, and they didn't turn it right, and then eventually they didn't charge up, not during the night, correction, that was a solar storm, dust storm, I'm thinking of an eclipse, that was a dust storm that came in, and it took a all the light away from it, and eventually died because of that. That's what it was. Anyway, let me just go on here. One of the other topics I was going to talk about had to do with Japan. You watch the news, you probably saw last week that President Biden met with the Prime Minister of Japan, and they had a lot of meetings. Some of the higher ups in Japan met with our NASA administrator, Nelson, and they came to an agreement. Japan is willing to build a prize, rover. You can put two people in it. Especially on future moon landing, you're going to have this rover riding around on the moon with its pressure. Before that, it was going to be a type of rover, similar but bigger and better than what Apollo 15, correct, 16 and 17 and 15 had, you know, they had different probes. You know, but they're nothing where it's big as you ride around. This one is a pressurized system where, you know, you'd be able to get inside of it. Two people would be able to traverse the moon, I guess, in shirt sleeve environment, you know? And, you know, that's the ultimate goal, to be able to go to different locations here and there. So I don't expect that to be an operation until Artemis set up a long time from now. Now, even if we get to the moon by 2026, that would be the earliest for a landing. And they have roughly a launch every year after that. By the time you get to Artemis 7, you know, the actual landing would be no force. I mean, it's probably 2029. These Artemis flights will continue, I guess, as long as they're funded, roughly every year going to the moon. And each one will be more and more involved. The rocket itself that launches is going to get more powerful. They have a powerful design. The iteration that they have now is going to have two more different iterations in the future. So that I found interesting. It would be able to carry a lot more weight. We'll see. I mean, the goal is to eventually set up some kind of a base. It should be temporary in the beginning, but ultimate goal would be to actually have a base to have a crew, multiple crews live there, you know, actually year-round in the far distant future. And we'll see. I mean, you know, it's an interesting proposition that they, as long as it's funded, we'll see. Let me drop it. Part of this Artemis program is to actually have a space station in orbit around the moon, called the Gateway. So, you know, you actually have two locations with people. At some point in the future, you'll have crew on board a space station, maybe for, you know, a month or two at a time. And also people down on the surface. Won't that be interesting? We want to talk about what are we going to do for awards in the future. You know, if it doesn't become commonplace that we're just, you know, grabbing an NHT and we're geosynchronous satellite on a regular basis. Or maybe the new awards will be, you know, how many QSRs you can get from how many bases on them. Anyway, any comments?
Yeah, Paul, come on. How many space stations? Are they making a series of space stations?
Well, for the moon, no. Just one. The Gateway. You know, decades from now, who knows what they'll come up with. You know, will they come up with private companies, you know, trying to do the same thing like they're doing now? I mean, there are private companies opening space stations. At least three or four that I can think of that they plan on eventually putting up around Earth to eventually replace the International Space Station. But the government project is called Gateway. That's, you know, that's what NASA is really helping, with the help of, you know, foreign countries. Russia's not on board on this one. But Japan is helping develop one of the modules for the space station. And, you know, a couple of other countries that I think they're up to around 40 or 50 countries that have signed on to what they call the Artemis Accord. Countries willing to assist or help the United States in our endeavor of, you know, of colonizing the moon, I guess. Back to you, John.
Hello, Paul.
Okay, question. Go ahead.
Elon Musk today, during the weekend, he says he wants to go to the moon and Mars and beyond. Is that possible, man?
Okay. Did you see the speech that he made, it had to be a 30-minute speech down when he was standing there down in Texas. Is that the speech you're talking about? I saw it. I wonder if that's the same one.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. He's got high hopes. I saw that. You know, I know he's talking seriously, but he's got a long way to go to do what he's doing. And if anybody else didn't see the speech, he's made predictions on what's coming up. You know, he's got predictions that are coming up shortly. You know, with the launch, for instance, he's planning on a Starship launch. Another one, they've launched three already. He's trying to fly for May, providing he gets the license from the government. Launch out of Boca Chica, Texas, and he's going to try to duplicate what he couldn't do last time. Last time he tried to launch the Starship, and I mean, he got pretty far, you know, but he's not 100%. He wanted to have the booster, the booster come back and wind up vertically landing in the Gulf of Mexico. You know, as there was some kind of a launch complex in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. He wants to come down vertically, and I'm sure he's going to try to photograph this. He also wants the Starship, the equivalent to the stage, which goes into orbit. He wants that to not go into orbit. You know, he wants to as far as the Indian Ocean and have it come through the atmosphere, you know, at a high speed, and check out the heating tiles that he has on board, make sure on that craft, see if it survives reentry. Last one did not survive reentry. He had some problems controlling it. Coming down more or less nose first, not, you know, straight nose, you know, on an angle, maybe about a 30-degree angle, you know, come down. And it came down tail first, and it was rotating. You can see it in the pictures. Anyway, that thing burnt up as well. So, they both did not complete their job that Elon wanted them to do. But he's going to try this time again with spaceship number four.
This guy, he's got, what, 20-plus launches on one rocket? He keeps sending it back up, sending it back up. Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, he's got the plan on being able to refuel these things in space. And now he claims he's going to launch, like, five of the things to refuel one. You know, you launch one that's eventually going to go to the moon. I mean, so you're going to need five more. A lot of the engineers who talked before that was thinking about more like 10 more to refuel the one Starship. Well, now he claims he can do it with five. That's what I'm saying. He's got high hopes. And then, like you said before, he has plans on eventually going to Mars. Forget about that. Yeah, he's going to the moon too, but his ultimate goal is to go to Mars, and he wants to send not 10 of these things to Mars. No, he wants to send, where did he say, Charlie? A thousand every 2 years or something. He wants to send thousands of starships to Mars. So, he's got high hopes. I guess he was into all his employees there, you know, they're all cheering, and oh, it's great. It's nice to dream, but, you know, I can tell you right now, it ain't going to happen anytime soon. Back to you, Charles.
How long would it take to get to Mars?
Oh, we do that now, you know, anywhere from 6 to 8 months, and roughly the same time to get back. But, you know, once you're there, you do have to stay about a year. And then after that year, then Earth and Mars come close to one another again, and you'd be able to return from Mars in about the same time period, 6 or 8 months.
It's not too bad. That's, what, 2 years old?
Yeah. Right. But they say 3 years to be safe, you know. You're on Mars, half a year to get there and half a year back, Charlie. So they're looking, you know, they're saying 2 years, you know, to be safe, just in case you have to stay there a little longer or you know, you want to launch a little earlier, or it's going to take a long time. But, you know, next thing you know, you might be spending 2 years on the planet. So they want a spacecraft that's going to handle 3 years with food, oxygen, water, and everything. Everything's recyclable to some degree. But they plan on living off the planet of Mars, taking the carbon dioxide, the water that's on Mars, mixing them together and getting methane out of it. You're going to be able to use methane for that fuel to launch back to Earth out of the water. Of course, you're going to be able to get oxygen to breathe. You're going to have water to drink. They have all these big plans. And he wanted to, I guess, maybe by the time he dies, you know, by that time, he wants to have 1 million people on Mars. I mean, this is some speech, you know. You saw it, I couldn't believe it. I was in shock. Yeah, it's not going to happen.
You never know, with Elon Musk. You never know.
Yeah. He's trying, you know. I mean, he's come a long way with the Falcon 9. He's up to over 300 launches. Just last weekend, he launched one of the boosters. The boosters come back and land on the ship, or sometimes they come back and land. But one of the boosters now flown 2 times. He's up to, he just broke a record. He's got over 6,000 satellites. 6,100 satellites put into space. Out of that, 5,500 are still operating. That's the Starlink system. In that speech, he said Starlink is paying all of this. This whole city is built down in Boca Chica, Texas. He calls it Stargate or something. And, he says all these, there's 2 million people that have signed up for the internet, for Starlink, and somehow are paying all these billions of dollars to fly the stuff to Mars. And I don't think he did the math right. Either that, or he borrowed money from somebody. Back to Trump.
He goes to Mars or something like that.
If you want to get an interesting book, we used to talk about this years ago on the net with Dick. It's called Packing for Mars. It was written by Mary Roach. Mary Roach. It's a very good book. And it talks about everything, everything you need to bring all the way to Mars, what it would take, and the amount of food and this and that. And Dick, to RAW, used to talk about this all the time. And I forgot the numbers, but, you need as much food as that you can fill up in your house just for 3 or 4 people to go to Mars. Then you got to keep that food. It's weight that you have to bring with you. You can't really grow anything on Mars yet. That's decades away. No animals walking around. Like the Joker. I wouldn't go to Mars because, I like to eat, some kind of Burger King. When you look down one of the satellites on a planet, I don't see any cows walking around. So. Back to Charlie, and then we'll move on to WS2.
Okay, well, I was in the food business. I know what it takes to store food, to buy it, and to save it.
That's like phenomenal
now.
Oh yeah. He's trying. He's got to do something. It's his car industry. He's having a little problems with that. So he's
pretty much given up on the idea of, you know, food infrastructure on the planet. He figures other other companies are going to be involved with the all this stuff, PowerPoint, whatever it takes on Mars, 3D buildings and all of that. He just wants to, build the rock itself for doing the work. Good luck with that. Let me just move on to the eclipse for a second. I know last week I tried and succeeded to make some CW contacts on 80 meters during the eclipse. And I know Frank is on but I don't know if you did. You listen, Frank. But, I did give it a shot on 3.5. Over to you, Frank. WS2.
Yes, I'm giving you 2BX. So, I was sort of listening what happened here. He said you wanted to, I don't think I'm not going to be able to do that right now. You said you wanted to see if you could work me on ADCW. Was that?
No, I was talking about the eclipse, and I was saying, we were talking about, I didn't know if you were going to listen to that frequency during the eclipse. I know I was transmitting. I did make some contacts, four contacts. And believe it or not, there was one getting close to you down there. There was one near Philadelphia, and then two more I made in Maryland. But I wonder if you heard anybody during the eclipse. Did you get on? Or did you have a chance? Did you try working on anybody, CW or anything? Right?
Yeah, no, I think somebody else was using the remote station I usually use, so I didn't have a chance to do that. Mitch W1SJ up in Burlington, who's an area of totality, and he said the observed propagation changes were disappointing. The only thing out of the ordinary he noticed was the United Alpha 9 coming through on FT8 on 40 around the time or just after totality. But the guy did not respond to him. But he said, other than that, he saw no unusual population. It's going to be interesting if that observation holds up. It doesn't sound like he did either. Those observations hold up in the statistics. It'll be very interesting to see him find explanation of what that is. Go ahead, Paul.
Okay, very good, Frank. Good to know. And, like I said earlier, last week I was saying, if you don't make a contact, that's good information, too. And all that data is eventually going to get to the citizen science group, and they'll evaluate it for weeks and months and years to come. They can make heads and tails out of that. They'll probably compare it to the eclipse of October of last year, the one that came across the country that went from Oregon all the way to actually popped out in Texas too, as far as our country is concerned. And that was not a total eclipse. That was we call that an annual eclipse. An annual eclipse is the moon goes completely in front of the sun, but because the moon is further away from the Earth than this time during the total eclipse, that's what is a good size ring around it that you can see, but this the total one, because the distance is closer for this one. They said that, up north, if you were up there, the moon completely blocked out the sun. My brother knew some people that went up north and sent back pictures, but they sent me pictures. Incredible. One spot, almost a solar flare. But they really had good. But we had a pretty good year, too, Frank. This was a 90% lockout. And I guess it was, I think you were probably in the 80-85% group, Frank.
I'm saying here 90%. Remember, as the crow flies, all that far away. The one time I did the trip by car was 80 miles from Brighton Beach, Brooklyn, to where I am in Northeast Philadelphia. So it's not actually very far away. It's closer than parts of Long Island, believe it or not. So no, the difference was not that much. The last total eclipse over North America, I believe, was 2017. During the sunspot minimum, and there were pronounced propagation changes during that one. And if in fact it proves out there were none or much less during this eclipse, I think the exclamation is going to have to do with that we're near the sunspot peak now, and that, you know, those solar prominences and stuff still visible and affecting the ionosphere, even during totality. So I think that may turn out to be one of the explanations. Anyway, I've got to get going, and I know you're getting toward the end of the net here. I'm glad you got in there with that, because I did want to hear what your observations were. 7-3 for now, UB2BX.
Okay, yeah. Well, have fun. Calling CQB an hour or so before, an hour or so after. So when the four contacts made, including one guy was sure I paid, that was pretty good. You know, on your way as well. For some reason, everything was down to the south, nothing up north. But we'll see. You know, the next eclipse is 2025, but it's a very small one. You have to be up early in the morning. The sun will be on the horizon. And I don't know, it looks like maybe the one thing, it'll be only be about 5%. But the one before that was 2012. You know, October of last year, they had one that was an annual. And yeah, you said that 2017. Yeah, I think that was during the presentation that fella gave to Weinmark. I believe, yeah, that's what he said. 2017 was the last one. But, he did say they were still evaluating things, and here it is years later. But they'll make comparisons, and, it might take many more eclipses before they could really say anything definitive. And let me just move on to one or two more topics. That'll be just the, I wanted to talk about the Angara launch. The Angara rocket is a large rocket, bigger than the Falcon 9, but it's built by Russia, and it successfully launched. No satellites on board the trial run. It did launch from Vostochny, which is far eastern Russia. It's close to, very close to, not too far from Alaska. They spent billions and trillions of dollars in launch facility in Russia, trying to get from Kazan. You know, when Russia launches, it's big rockets. All the rockets nowadays pretty much launch from Kazan. They do have a launch facility north of Moscow, which they launch a proton rocket that I talked about before. Now they just, once in a while, they will launch another Soyuz rocket from that location. They're usually military flights. They're Polish type of flights. They'd like to get away from the Kazakhstan, because they pay Kazakhstan money. That country wants money. They're fed up with that, and they built this other complex. Many years to do it. And they launched a Soyuz rocket, a couple of Soyuz rockets from there. And now they're launching an Angara rocket, which is a very large rocket from Russia. Bigger than that proton rocket that they used to use for their heavy vehicle. Anyway, this one finally got off the ground. The last one failed. This one made it to orbit. So now they have another working rocket. But still, I mean, they've got a long way to go to catch up. They've really fouled up their economy by going after the Ukraine. Big mistake. Any comments? WS2M.
The Russian
sending up rocket. Got a little noisy on that transmission. I missed that. I heard you, but I couldn't talk to you.
Are the Russians successful? Do they got a large gap to catch up?
Yeah, they got a long way to catch up. I'm not worried about them anymore. China is very competitive. They've already sent, spacecraft to the moon and had a sample return. And now they're planning another one, again on the far side of the moon. They plan on doing a sample return that as well. But I mean, we're way ahead of them. I mean, we put six different crews on the moon 50 years ago. Okay, another rocket that went up. For the last time for us is the Delta IV rocket. And that launched last week. Especially that's up. We got three Delta IV rockets, both of you together. They quote the Delta IV Heavy. And puts out, I think, around 3.5 million pounds, close to 4 million pounds of thrust. Got these liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen engines. They're all liquid hydrogen, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. All three rocks. And they go up, and the fourth side separates with the starboard. The core keeps on going, and eventually the stage above that brings the payload to orbit. In case the payload looks at the spy plane for NRO, the National Reconnaissance Office. Nothing to do with NASA. NASA has used this rocket before over the last, 14 years since launching. For instance, they used it for the Polar Parker probe, the one that's very close to the sun right now, 4 or 5 million miles away. That's how close they'd like to get to the sun. They used this particular rocket that Delta Heavy to do that years ago. And back in 2014, they did use it for a test of the Orion spacecraft, not for an orbital flight. They took it out on a suborbital flight, but they took it out like 3,000, 4,000 out in space, and turned out and started back toward the Earth. They wanted to go as fast as
possible. Time to complete it.
Get the speed of Orion coming back from the moon. That's why they used the Delta Heavy for that. They drove this thing out like 4,000 miles, turned it around, and then, reignited the engine flying through the atmosphere. And then they could, I don't know if they got up to 25,000 miles an hour. That's how fast you are coming back to the moon. But, close to it anyway, but they can test the heat shield. Sure, it was over 17,500. That's normal. That's normal orbital speed. That's the NAT one. What replaces it is the Volta rocket. The Volta rocket is replacing all the Deltas, the regular Delta IV, and then this one is the Delta IV Heavy. They used to have Delta IIs. They used to fly on a regular basis, and they're all retired now. And they're supposed to take over and good work with these vehicles. Any comments before I close? This WS one.
And there was another rocket set up in the space station.
Another rocket went up to the space station recently, is that what you're saying?
Went up Thursday, I think.
Said I missed that one. Thursday. No, I missed that one, Sean. It wasn't a crew vehicle, I know that. I don't any scheduled cargo vehicle that went to the space station. I'm not sure which one that is. I'll look into it. You know, probably try to keep a record of that. Back to you, Charlie.
Excuse me. That was Friday at 4:26.
Okay, and it went to the space station, huh? Okay. I don't know. I don't know. We'll look into it. Very good, Charlie. Thanks for that. You know, they have to have regular flights up there on a regular basis. You know, between progress ships from Russia resupplying food, boats, science, equipment, Cygnus vehicle that goes up on a regular basis, American, of course. Then you have your Dragon cargo vehicle going up on a regular basis on a Falcon 9 rocket. Years gone by, you had the ATV, automatic transfer vehicle, that was being sent up by the European Space Agency. Every year or so, that would go up. You had the HTV, they called it. That was a large vehicle that was sent up by Japan. Again, a car vehicle. They sent 9 of them up over the years. And they plan on, they're in the process of building another one, a bigger, newer version of their cargo HTV. So, takes a lot, like you said earlier, Charlie, tons of food just for the space station. And that thing's only 250 miles away, you know. And the moon, it's a quarter of a million miles away. And Mars, sometimes, is like 1,000 miles away. 1,000 times that distance. So, maybe everybody's going to die when you go to Mars, I guess. So I'm going to come to a grinding halt here. Thank everybody for listening, and we'll try to be back here next week as well. I'm going to turn it back to Roy, AC2GS, WS2N, for the Space Net Report.
Very good. This is AC2GS. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for all that you do for the Space Net Report, all that you do for the Technical Net, all that you do for the club. We all appreciate it, and I especially appreciate it. And I appreciate everyone who participated tonight. I hope you had some fun. I hope you learned a few things. And I hope you'll join us next Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try and do this all over again. As always, a few things I'd like to remind you. JK2RW, who ran this show 40-plus years, always ended with the advice to be kind to each other. That's good advice in general, especially these days. We live in curious times, so try not to, try to keep an open mind. Try not to be argumentative. Try to be kind to each other. And, as always, like to throw in good old Epictetus. It's impossible for him to learn what he already knows. So try to keep your mind open to new ideas. Learn something new every day if you can. You know, if you don't use it, you're going to lose it. So exercise your brain as well as body. And again, thanks to everyone for those people who practice. Have a Zizach, fun with the matzah. And we'll be back next Sunday night at 8 p.m. to do this all over again. Our rebels now are done. And as always, I will be clear after I say, Slava Ukraine.
73, boy. Have a good night.
73, Paul.
I hope you don't eat too much. I just finished off my freaking bunny rabbit. What a mistake.
One of the few problems I don't have with Passover is overeating. I'm not a big fan of unleavened bread and such. If you got to pick a religion, don't pick one that's made from desert people. They don't know how to have a good time.
Very good. Very good, Roy. All right. Have a good holiday. We'll catch you next week. AC2GS, WS to enter.
You don't have to do that with you and your uniform. Speak to you next week.
You adapt your cunning to your circumstances. That's all I gotta say.
73, November 2, Zulu Charlie.
Right. Some people just ain't capable of having any kind of kindness or empathy for others. Unfortunately, there are a few of those on this computer.
Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Repeater. W2VL Repeater.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Repeater. InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Repeater.
W2VL Repeater.
InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Repeater.
W2VL Repeater. 2VL Repeater. W2VL Reader.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Repeater.
W2VL Repeater. This is the W2VL Repeater. Good morning. Time is 5 o'clock M.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL Repeater.
W2VL Repeater.
Yeah,
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Flymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater.
Mark InfoNet tonight at 30. This is the W2VL repeater.
NY2H, WB2Z, as in.
Thank you.
Skymark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
W2VL repeater. W2VL repeater.
Are you still in Mineola, WBWAK?
Yeah, I left. Headed over. I was actually just heading over to Land's End in Garden City for a moment.
Okay, I'm just leaving Bayside.
Yeah, I think there's some stuff there maybe that might work. Just,
after getting
in on the cable.
Yeah, well, like I said, if you're over there, you know, during the week, give me a holler. I can't see exactly where, what are you thinking about putting putting 6 meters on there?
Well, the link is already in the cabinet and all set up. I just got it turned off because I didn't really want to mess around looking for an antenna.
Gotcha. I understand.
Yeah, so it's a simple thing, you know, relatively speaking.
WB2IKK. Good morning, George.
Morning, Steve. I should say that twice. Okay? Yeah, very good. Heading over to a doctor's office for a visit, and, had an interesting class at Hofstra last Thursday, where we're trying to conduct some license exams. The student interest is somewhat less than I had hoped for, but we kind of gone through it, and I got their engineer to start on his general, which is a tough thing to do because he's actually in the process of finishing up his PhD, which means he's at the defense part of his thesis for his dissertation there, and that's a stressful time for when he's trying to do that.
I understand. Mr. Druckmann, you're looking to go both ways on the thing there, right, on the UHF, in and out?
Yeah, I got something up at about 70 foot. I just don't know how resonant it is going to be down that low.
Okay. That would be nice. That repeater doesn't work bad, I'll tell you. I'm surprised where I hear it.
Yeah, me too. And considering that's reflected, because of where it is resonant, that's pretty amazing. I had wanted them to change it out last time they were doing work there, but it became dark and nobody ever came back, and I don't even know if he grounded the stuff.
Yeah, like I say, Mike's down in Texas now, but his partner's son is sort of this guy Dwyer. He's a young guy, but really involved. I think next time you need something done, I'll get you his information.
Yeah, I know. He was the person I dealt with last time. Here we go. I'm just looking for the entrance to the shopping center here.
Okay. I'm heading home. I got a bunch of stuff to do. I got to put the wife got a bunch of plants registered that have to go into the ground. And it looks like today's going to be a nice day. But I think I can put my snowblower away.